How's it going, everyone? Welcome to another edition of the Locked On Phillies podcast. My name is Dan Wilson, recent Temple University Media School graduate and lifelong Phillies fan, Dan Wilson, that is. And on today's episode, part two of my conversation with Ty Daubert of PhilliesNation.com. Ty, great baseball writer. Definitely recommend giving him a follow on all of his work and on Twitter. Ty also specializes in minor league baseball, so if you want to know, you know, what's up with the farm system or what's up with other farm systems around baseball, be sure to check that out. In my first episode with him, we discussed kind of what the Padres are doing. Of course, the New York Mets also just making a big trade with some prospects to get Francisco Lindor and Carlos Carrasco. And the Phillies haven't been in that type of conversation with their farm system for a while, though they did trade away Garrett Clevenger for a bullpen arm in Jose Alvarado. So we did get into that. So if you missed it, be sure to go listen to episode number one. But in episode number two, as fans of the show know, it's kind of my get to know you episode. We discussed more into Major League Baseball's rules, what he liked and didn't like from 2020. We've kind of built a friendship here this past summer, really, from being a fellow Little League umpires, I'll call it. We're both rules enthusiasts of Major League Baseball. And there's a lot of rules, frankly, coming up here in 2021 and beyond, Major League Baseball has to establish, whether it's the extra innings rule moving forward, the three-batter minimum moving forward, will there be a designated hitter in the National League, and a whole lot more. So we discussed that in this episode, as well as our love for the World Baseball Classic and just baseball in general. It's just two guys talking some baseball here in this first week of January, where, you know, Locked On Phillies, your source for Phillies talk and just baseball talk in general all year long. So without any further hesitation, I will turn it over to my conversation, part two of my conversation, that is, with Ty Daubert of PhilliesNation.com.
Many people don't know that, you know, we've kind of gotten to know each other online as fellow, world-renowned Little League umpires here rules enthusiasts, if you will. The DH, some of the rules, they kind of debuted in the major leagues in general. What did you like? What did you not like? And how do we not have a clear-cut answer on, like, these rules moving forward? Like, wouldn't you think that would affect the free agency market now that we're sitting here in January?
You would think. I think, the Braves the last couple of years have been quicker to sign a lot of players than other teams. You look, they already got Morton and Drew Smyly, and they kind of have been operating that way the past couple of years. I think if there's a DH, I think Marcelo Zuna is a Brave again already. But
we literally don't know. Like,
we don't know. We don't know. It looks like it's leaning towards no DH in the National League, which is kind of absurd in its own right, because next season it's going to be back. Like, it's almost a guarantee that it's going to be back.
The way they're handling it is so dumb, in my opinion. But again, like, I could go on a rant about how, like, I don't know how you feel. I'm in the minority, and I kind of tell people when I get into this argument about this, like, if it were up to me, the DH would have never been invented. Like, I am kind of against the norm, and it's not necessarily good for baseball that I would have pitchers hit. I kind of like the strategy around it. But the fact that we have a DH, and we've had it in the American League for so long, and it makes more sense in 2021, and we just had it in 2020, and you know you're going to get it back. Like, 2020 was the excuse to just end this conversation for good. Just bring it to the National League. You're going to get there anyway. Bringing no DH back to the NL in 2021 makes virtually no sense to me. I like it consistent in the two leagues because of kind of what happened to Nelson Cruz that screwed the Rangers, and you're playing a guy in the field who hasn't played the field all year. Like, I don't think it makes sense to make it different. In my own perfect world where I reinvent baseball, the DH again never exists to begin with. Now that it does exist and we're already in this spot, it makes sense to move forward with it. And I don't know why it's so hard for them to reach that conclusion.
Yeah, I personally, my stance on the DH, no DH, I've kind of gone back and forth throughout my life. As a younger viewer, I was always anti-DH and thought pitchers should hit because I liked the idea of pitchers hitting home runs. As I got a little bit older and into my teenage years, I was for the DH because I just thought it would be better to watch the better hitters hit most of the time. And then I'm sitting here at the old age of 20 years old, and I don't care much anymore. I think it's just pick one.
Literally pick one.
It doesn't really matter. It barely affects the viewing experience. Like, people say it creates jobs sometimes. I don't think that makes sense. It's still the same amount of players on the roster. It just goes from one player becoming a bench player and going to a starter. Like, I get that. A bench player turns into a starter, but I don't think it matters that much.
I suppose it increases the salary of someone like Marcelo Ozuna, but he would have a job regardless. But in a hypothetical world where there's no DH, like Marcelo Ozuna moves to a bench player or just like a bad fielder who hits sometimes, as opposed to...
Yeah, that's fair. That's true. But I still think, like, I don't know. David Ortiz probably plays first base somewhere if there's no DH his career.
David Ortiz is like a good enough hitter that he'd find his way in the lineup. Like, whenever they're playing in the World Series, somehow David Ortiz figured out how to play first base. Like,
exactly.
Pick one consistent in both leagues. It's going to be having the DH versus no DH. This shouldn't be that hard. And let me make one other thing perfectly clear. No, it's not that I enjoy pitchers hitting. It's more the strategy around that, of like when to pull a guy, when to double switch, that kind of thing. And another thing I want to make perfectly clear is that if I'm the Philadelphia Phillies, I want a DH, because they have a number of players, whether it be, let's say they re-sign Realmuto and you want to get him in the lineup some days and you don't want to catch him like they did this year, whether it's Rhys Hoskins, Alec Bohm, who's not really a great defensive third baseman. Like, they have a lot of bad defense currently in their lineup. Bryce Harper's going to become a worse fielder as his contract goes on. Like, it's a nice little disposable tool, or a nice little tool that the Phillies would love to have at their disposal, I'm sure. And I would love for them to have at their disposal moving forward. So as a Phillies fan, I want it. As a overall baseball fan who's not really working with self-interest, and again, if you could remove baseball history, I wouldn't have it. But at this point, I think it just makes sense. And I can't believe it's taken this long and they still haven't even reached a conclusion. I never really asked you, because again, we have shared many stories of parents or little league kids are just like weird situations that come up, and it's like, no, we know that role, because if Dan Wilsons and Ty Dauberts aren't going to know these rules, no one in the world is going to know them, and no one is there to enforce them. What were your thoughts on the three batter minimum, the runner on second to start the 10th inning? I'm trying to think if there's anything else this year that I'm missing.
Seven inning doubleheaders.
That was the biggest one. I forgot it. How did you like or not like all of those changes? Would you like to see any or all or any combination of those things moving forward?
Three batter minimum, if I ran the league, that would be gone. That never would have been implemented. It did not speed up the game, but it did make us sometimes have to watch pitchers that clearly didn't have it, and then you had to watch them pitch to three batters, and it just didn't work. It didn't do what it is intended to do. And
the only rebuttal I have to that, like, I believe the length of game in baseball this year was at an all-time high, which on the surface seems like it didn't work at all. Maybe it was used to combat, like, we were dealing with a 60-game schedule, so you'd think managers were more willing to go to the bullpen anyway, which would cause for those longer games. Like, I guess we really don't know what this rule would do to the length of a game in a 162-game schedule, but how much time are you shaving off a game by, like, one or two less trotting out to the mound? If you want a way to speed up baseball, how about this? Baseball's the only sport in the world where when a reliever who's been warming up in the bullpen for this entire time, like, is ready to enter the game, he gets more warm-up pitches on the real mound. Like, we'll just make him ready to go. And, like, do we really need the manager, like, taking his sweet old time walking out to actually put him in? Like, couldn't he just point, you trot in, you just continue with the, like, that would be a better rule change than giving him a three batter minimum, in my opinion.
Now, I think that times in between innings and implementing some kind of reasonable pitch clock is the way to go.
They've been doing that
exactly
for a while. Yeah.
And nobody complains about it in the minor leagues. Maybe they did when it was implemented. It doesn't affect anybody. Those are the rule changes I would put into the major leagues, like pitch clocks and in between inning clocks, and, you know. But it's the league and the networks want to get their commercial time in. So the in-between innings is kind of what feels excruciating, great, especially during the playoffs.
Great. Don't go to commercial. Call it the AT&T, call it the bullpen or whoever the local sponsor is. Get the guy in and just keep the game moving. Like, that would be so much better. It's ridiculous. Guy on second base, your thoughts?
Guy on second base, I liked it. I thought it was fine.
Would you want it moving
maybe
forward?
It's yes. I long extra inning games are like, sure, you have your Wilson Valdez moments, you have your Roy Oswalt moments. Like, yes, they do happen, but the majority of extra inning games are just so awful to sit through. They're so bad to sit through. Like, 18 inning games, if it just ends in like a regular sac fly and there's no position player pitching, that's not fun to sit through. No one's enjoying it. Most of the fans are gone. Just like, it can even be a hockey situation where they do the shootouts in the regular season and then just do the regular overtime in the playoffs. That's what you can do. You can do the man on second for the regular season, and when it comes to playoff time, it's regular extra innings. I think that's probably the way to go.
That's what they did, and that's precisely what I said. Like, that, I think that's the comparison here, is that the runner on second base is baseball's version of the shootout. No one wants to sit through the 18-inning game in May. We're sitting there with a packed place in October. Suddenly, people are fine sitting through a seven-hour game that, you know, has all these bullpen changes, and no one's bringing in a position player to pitch unless, like, literally every other guy's arm has fallen off because, like, yeah, the game
in the regular season, like, it's just in the regular season, it's not worth it for the team. The team usually has to decide in one of these games, okay, so are we wiping out our bullpen for the next 3 days, or are we conceding the game by throwing a position player? Are we throwing Neil Walker in there? Right? What are we doing here? And it's just that isn't wiping out a team's bullpen and making the games kind of rough to watch for the next 4 days or so. It's not worth it over the 18 inning game that nobody is staying up to watch.
I don't know where your football allegiance lies, if anywhere, but don't tell Giants, New York Giants fans, that is, they could possibly be throwing a game. I mean, it just would ruin the integrity of baseball on another level. And I can't even imagine what would happen in that specific instance. The 7-inning doubleheader. Did you like it? Did you not like it? Again, this is another thing that was kind of adopted from the minors. They've been doing it in college. Like, we've seen this at lower levels. We've never seen it in the majors. What were your thoughts?
I didn't mind it, but the thing is, it also barely matters because there are never doubleheaders in a non-pandemic season where they are having players test positive for the coronavirus and then they have to cram as many games in as possible, like that in a very short window. It doesn't happen in a regular year, so it barely matters.
The Cardinals are playing like 40 games, like a 20-day stretch. Like, they're just playing 14 inning days. Like, it's nothing because they had half their season wiped out and they still didn't even get to 60 games. Technically, they finished at 58 and they were going to potentially have to play a doubleheader on the Monday after the season. Like, totally ridiculous. And the fact that they managed to make the playoffs with that and other teams such as the Phillies couldn't, is like ridiculous.
Yeah, that's
just the way that it goes.
That was baseball in 2020. Not to overuse the same trope that a lot of people, 2020.
2020. It was 2020.
But that was how it worked. It was an experience, to say the least.
Look, you could still have, there are sometimes rainouts where they have like a day night doubleheader the following day. I think they should just go back to 9 innings. Like, I thought that was the one I hated the most. The three batter minimum, I didn't like, because I thought it was a misguided attempt to change something that really didn't need changing. The guy on second base, I thought it was exciting. I actually liked it in the World Baseball Classic a few years ago, which, underrated thing 2020 took from us. Or that 2020 took from us into 2021, is that they're not having the
World Baseball Classic. I'm a huge World Baseball Classic
fan here, and it's not going to happen.
The last World The was last great. World Baseball literally Classic amazing. Was awesome.
Some of it the was best amazing. Baseball, like literally some of the best baseball I've ever seen. And it's stuck in the middle of spring training. And I get it's like a hard thing to schedule because you can't do it in the middle of the year. Hockey for years used to take that Olympic break where they wouldn't do an all-star game. They're scheduling like three games in three nights. There's really not that kind of space in a Major League Baseball season to have guys take a break for the Olympics, unless you agreed every 4 years, like we're just going to play like 25 less games, which I don't know if we'll ever see something like that. So instead they do this World Baseball Classic in March. It was amazing. And it wasn't even just because the U.S. won, like the passion that you saw from the Dominican team. And I think who else was it? The Mexican team. Like it was so, so great. And there was that one game where Jose Bautista, I think, threw out a guy at the plate and like both teams are storming onto the field. Like it was nuts. It was literally nuts. And it was a postseason atmosphere every single day. And they stuck those guys on second. And for pace of play, it was bad because those games all took like 5 hours because managers bullpenned like the hell out of those games to like,
well, you have to, because I know it's spring training. Yeah,
no, I know you do because it's spring training, but also it made for like great tournament baseball feel because they were all playoff games.
The best was when, you know, two Orioles teammates at the time, when Machado got his home run robbed by Adam Jones, like the World Baseball Classic the World Baseball Classic has been a thing, I think, since what, 2006 now? And every single tournament they've had, I think, has gotten a little bit better. And 2017 was the last one. It was really good. I'm excited for whenever they can hold the next one.
2023 is the next scheduled one. So I guess we'll get two in like a 3 year span if they keep the same pace. They've kind of got like, they try and give it an Olympic feel of every 4 years. The first one was 06. And then I think they made it 09 because they wanted to not like conflict with like a World Cup. It wouldn't really matter because they're in March, but they're on like an odd system. They're not in the Olympic year. They're not on the World Cup year. They're kind of on like, it was 06, 09, then I think 13, 17 was supposed to be 21. They're not going to go to the length to do it this year. They're kind of waiting 2 years. So I don't know if they'll be back in 25 or 27 or whether that decision's even been decided or discussed at this point. But World Baseball Classic, great tournament, and they utilized it then, and it was a very exciting rule. It's certainly, as someone who enjoys baseball strategy, I thought it was fun. Like, do you bunt? Do you try and hit the guy over? Do you just try and knock him in? Weird baseball quirks. The Mariners literally had an inning this year where two guys got to the plate, like first time in baseball history. There was a guy who scored, I think was 0 for 5 with 5 strikeouts and managed to score a run, which was like the first guy in baseball history to do that. Like people are improving their runs scored without even reaching base. Like it just, it breaks baseball reference and like the stats of baseball. But you know, it again, 2020, like well, what else can you chalk it up to? But if they decide to keep it, no, I hear you. Like I wouldn't be pit, like people are like, oh, it ruins the integrity of baseball. I can't say that I prefer it. Like I don't mind long extra inning games. I think they don't happen as often as people say that they do, and it increases the chances that you get something like a Valdez or Velasquez story. Sometimes they're just bad. You're like, you'll have a 16 inning game and you're like, that was pointless, the team ruined their bullpen and it wasn't that exciting. I wouldn't necessarily be an advocate for it, but like I can't lie and say that I don't enjoy it in the moment, and I'd be fine again only for the regular season. I don't want to see this in like a playoff game. Like that, I don't want to see a hockey playoff game ending with a shootout, but using a shootout in a 162 game, like hockey uses it to prevent long games in an 82 game season. You're playing every day. You don't want to throw pitchers' arms out. This is better than having a, like everyone freaks out, similar to like, you know, when a pitcher hits a home run, it's like the same thing when a position player pitches. No, it's bad. It's like a cool little video that gets reposted over and over again, which is not a bad thing to increase social media engagement in baseball, but I don't think it's worth shifting the rules around it for.
What's up, everyone? Are you into sports betting? Because look, there's only one place that has you covered and one place we here at Locked On trust, and that's betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag. Use that promo code LOCKEDON for your 50%. Yes, you heard that correct. 50% welcome bonus. Look, this weekend, we have not four, but six NFL wildcard games for the first time ever. Plenty of action to get on there. If that's not enough for you, on Monday, we have the College Football National Championship between Alabama and Clemson. There's NBA on every night. The NHL coming back this month. And look, do not sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on that action. Don't forget to use your promo code LOCKEDON. You'll receive that 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Again, BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Hey, what's up, everyone? Dan Wilson here from the Locked On Phillies podcast, telling you about my friends at RockAuto.com. Well, chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. RockAuto.com prices are the same for everybody, and they are reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear like airlines do. RockAuto.com is for everybody and does not require membership or an account login. Look, RockAuto.com, it's also a family business serving auto parts customers like you for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. Again, go to RockAuto.com for the body parts for your car, any make, any model, from hundreds of manufacturers. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all of the parts your car, and again, that's any type of car, will ever need. It's rockauto.com. 2020 is mercifully over. It's time for a fresh start and a few more wins. If you're betting this year and you want more wins, listen to the Locked On Bets podcast with your boy Q and Lee Sterling of Paramount Sports. They're picking college basketball, football, NBA locks all winter long. Subscribe to Locked On Bets wherever you get your podcasts.
For every Wilson Valdez appearance, there are probably five. There are five Scott Kingery appearances on the mound, and that is just it's not worth it. It's not worth it. The one rule change that I want to discuss here is I don't care if they keep doubleheaders seven innings, but ban day-night doubleheaders. Ban them. They're bad. They should all be single admission. And even the ones this year, we had so many doubleheaders, and they took so long to get the second one started. They would take like a half hour. It should be, I've said this on my own podcast, I've said it to a bunch of people, it should be like a travel baseball tournament. Get them on the field, start in 10 minutes. What are we waiting for? They're warmed up. They just played. What are we doing? Yeah,
they don't. Well, I guess you want to give them a little bit of a break. That doesn't annoy me.
A break? It's not basketball.
No, I hear you. I'm kidding. Look, if 2020 gave us anything, it was like a youth feel to sports. Like, I wanted the NBA bubble to go full AAU and just have like games on top of games with like no curtain between, and just have them going at the same time, and like NBA teams waiting to get
on. You're not sure which court the whistle came from.
Yeah, I wanted that kind of feel to it. Teams waiting to get on. The broadcasters don't even have access to the rosters. Like, the stats are because of bad Wi-Fi. Like, just give it the full AAU feel. They're rolling out random guys you've never heard of. Like, that would have been the way to go in the bubble. Baseball, yeah, give it the travel baseball feel. Why? Like, I played triple headers in travel baseball. Just squeezing games like it's, and the Cardinals, if any team was ever going to play a triple header in Major League Baseball, they were about to squeeze the Cardinals in late in September to get the games in. Like, you would have seen it. It obviously messes up pitching rotations in a way that travel baseball, when you're only playing on Saturdays and Sundays, is a lot different. I get it. Well, I'd be for less time in between games, at the most like 20 minutes. The day night double headers. Look, you're not going to get any argument from me. I don't think the owners like single admission games. It's just they want two separate tickets to get in the game. Again, I don't think any non-Major League Baseball owner would argue against that. But look, it's just how it works. Every now and again, you will still get a single admission doubleheader. I think I was at one in 2017 when they played the Marlins late in the year. It was the only way they were getting anyone in the ballpark anyway, was offering 18 innings of bad baseball as opposed to nine. They lost both games. Like, but the kid I was sitting with caught what turned out to be Andres Blanco's final home run of his Phillies career. He's actually been a guest here on the podcast twice. I'll give him a shout out, Jason Cantor. So that was kind of fun. And we still have the video of that, of him going nuts, and I'm sitting next to him. And we also made it during the first game. There was like a big pigeon or something that was chilling out in our section. We were the only ones there. And because no one, and I mean like literally no one watches the first, no one watches Marlins broadcast to begin with, but they certainly aren't watching like the 4 o'clock game on a Tuesday Marlins broadcast. And the Marlins sideline guy came over to us and was like, because we were the only ones who had seen it, and they were infatuated with this bird. Like, again, the Marlins are bad, the Phillies are bad. And they decided, hey, let's kill an inning by sending this poor sideline guy to go cover like this interesting looking bird. And he asked us about it. And my friend who is MLB TV in Pittsburgh sent me the video. So I have a nice little TV cameo on Fox Sports Florida from that day in the first game. Then again, on NBC Sports Philly, Andres Blanco hit a home run off of Jose Urania and was caught. But again, the team was bad. We ran home in a monsoon into the car that day. You're just not going to get them. But it, look, thing, if you actually sit there for a full regular doubleheader, again, they don't happen that often, but it can create some pretty good stories, even if the team's bad. So I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, like you said, that's what they do, the 2 7-inning ones in the minor leagues. I think that works.
It's
a better experience.
You're literally changing the amount of innings in a game. Like, I don't, that's why I don't like it, because you're literally changing the strategy. Like, a ninth inning guy becomes a seventh inning guy, and you're killing the middle innings kinds of things. Like, and I maybe it made sense this year because they were trying to get
it made sense this year because they had so many.
I don't want to see that moving forward. Like, I would, that's the one thing I would go, like, we can just play 9-inning games now, because we're not going to schedule a bunch of these. Like, I know they do it in the minors, and that's by the way a good place to test out rules. Here's the big one that I always get in debates to, and I haven't brought up. As we were talking about creating jobs earlier with the DH, and again, we're both umpires. Are you for or against a robot strike zone?
I think there's pros and cons. I think that getting all the calls right is never really a con. And people seem to like want calls to be wrong more often. That like they wouldn't put it that way, but they kind of express it like the human error and like the human element. It's like, oh, so you just want calls to be wrong. Okay. My only thing is that there is so much value in the current game in how catchers frame. There are catchers in baseball that are only in the majors, basically only because they are really good at framing and getting strikes called. And if you put in an automated strike zone, like, you are completely wiping out a huge part of how catchers are evaluated right now. And I don't know if that's good for the game. And I don't know if the game is exactly ready for that, because think of how many like minor league catchers that they're defensive minded catchers, like half their value is just taken away. And then you have to restructure. You could see a lot of catchers being let go of because of that. And it's just, it would be a huge shift, like kind of an underratedly big shift in how we think about the position. So I don't know.
They have tried it at the minor league level, not necessarily extensively, but it has been done. Like, what do you have any, because it is something that I've thought about, like the whole framing thing. My first personal reaction to that is, and I'm not trying to totally change baseball forever here, is the rule says it's like the strike is based upon where the pitch crosses the plate. If we have the technology in 21 to enforce it that way, we should probably use it. And usually the argument against utilizing some sort of technology or replay system is that it extends the game. I could almost understand that some people don't like all the challenges we see in baseball these days. I don't feel that way. I'm in favor of getting the call right, but I could understand one more who says that, like, you know what? It's a game in May. I don't really care if the guy was beaten by a half a step. Like, let's just go with the call. And then maybe in the playoffs, we use it. The argument against it, like, it takes no, if you can really perfect it. And again, it's been utilized, and I've seen videos of where it works and where it doesn't work. And I think you'd still have an umpire there to make sure it does work. Like, there was that video a few years ago of a pitch that bounced into the zone and it calls it a strike. Okay, so obviously you have an umpire override it there. But if you have the guy with an earpiece and there's someone watching it and you can basically get this thing perfected, every broadcast in baseball has a strike zone on the right now. Like, you can't even sell that maybe the umpire was, you know, thought it was over the plate, or there's no like wondering whether it was a strike or not. Like, everyone at home and even in the ballpark now too, when they show it, knows whether it was a strike or not. Like, there's no hiding from that. And the only person working with incomplete information in real time is the guy making the call. Like, it's time we give them the same access that we all have. And if you can get this thing to not take any extra time, I think you have to do it.
Yeah, I mean, players seem to also not love it sometimes. Like, there are pitches
I can hear the catchers who don't want to get rid of it.
You've seen
the value.
But I've even seen with hitters, there are some cases where the ball, like, technically crosses at the knees, but by the time the catcher gets it, it's like almost at the dirt. And everyone in the stadium, it looks like a ball, but it technically caught the bottom of the zone and the umpire rings them up. And it would take some getting used to. I umpired in Cooperstown with an ump that was also an independent league umpire. And he actually worked with the automated strike zone.
Did he like it? Like, what was his thoughts on it?
I didn't get the vibe that he liked it. I didn't get that. He didn't really want to say, because of course he didn't have much of a choice there. But I can't imagine many umpires would be big fans of it.
Well, that's the other thing, is we're talking about it taking away catcher's value. It takes away umpires who call good strike zones value away. Also, like, it's not
also like all the major league umpires right now, if you watch an old game from like 25 years ago, the umpires are bad. Like, they're the strike zones are big and the umpires are
bad.
Honestly, they're frankly really bad. And the umps today get more criticism than ever, and their strike zones are really good. Like, they are ridiculously good right now. So I don't even think we'd get that much of a change. People just like to complain.
Well, again, it's because the technology is so advanced, and anyone who turns on any baseball broadcast can see that when a guy misses his spot, like, if the guy lines up outside and the guy misses a foot inside, to the umpire, it looks like he missed, but the pitch might have been right down the middle. And suddenly that gets spread in social media. Like, I think you have to do it if you're baseball, just because the whole world knows that this got screwed up, which then causes the player to complain online. Like, 25 years ago, the umpires had more leeway to be bad because you couldn't really prove it. Like, now we all know.
And they showed it. They showed it too.
Yeah. And they showed it. But like, now we know, like, in real time, you can't give fans, in my opinion, MLB at bat and track every pitch and show it on every broadcast and give all of these things to fans, which we should be doing to grow the game, and show them where they're going right and wrong. And then to the umpires say, well, just, you know, this guy who throws a 98 mile an hour pitch that moves, like, track it with your eyes. Like, it seems a little misguided. And look, I get it. Umpires' value is going to go down. Catcher's value is going to go down. It's not as simple as snapping your fingers and saying, hey, put it in. Again, I would have thought that saying we're going to keep the DH after 2020 would have been a snap of the fingers and keep it in. It's not. Everything moves slow. It wouldn't be baseball if it didn't. I just think you have, like, the rule says it. We're so infatuated in baseball with unwritten rules of, well, then it's going to take the art of framing away. And if you miss your spot, you shouldn't get a strike. No, the pitch was over the plate. Like, and I don't care if it looks like in the stadium it dropped off. If we implement this system, implement it well, and it's well respected, then everyone in the stadium is going to be like, well, it must have crossed the knees and fallen off. Like, if you're in an NFL game and it looks like the guy's out of bounds, people still don't always agree with the video replay system, but you're sitting at home, like, everyone who's watching the game at home is reacting, saying it actually looks like they got the call right because we have a camera that zooms in on it. And for years, we just relied on the ref's eyes, and we were like, oh, wait, we have cameras. We could actually just get the call right. Like, the pushback on accuracy makes no sense, especially when we, like, it's known that we have the technology to do it, and we show this level of accuracy or lack thereof to anyone who watches a baseball game except the arbitrator. It would be like, you know, it would be like giving the judge less information than the or like giving the jury less information than the general public.
Yeah. It's also like barely matters. Like it doesn't really matter.
Look, I hear what you're saying. A lot of ways, all people only complain in the 1% of pitches they get wrong. I hear you. It's not the biggest thing pressing baseball today. I get it. But I think we're going to see it eventually, though.
We're going to see it one day.
And I'm excited about it. Like, I'm literally excited. Like, it. I don't want to see a strike zone on NBC Sports Philly, or if I'm streaming an MLB TV game on any other, on ESPN or Fox Sports, whatever. I don't want to know whether the pitch was a strike or a ball if the umpire doesn't. So let's get it for them, too. Like, it seems like I could have
a baseball viewing experience would probably be better without that strike zone. Like that pops up on the screen.
I love it.
We would get a lot fewer complaints, I think.
Oh, yes, exactly. But I think they've already gone too far. They've already given the ability for people to complain.
Oh, for sure. We're in too deep.
We're in too deep. It's like releasing security footage again of a crime and saying, well, there's inconclusive evidence of this video that everyone can see here. Like, you're telling everyone the umpire's being sold down the river. The NBA does it all the time with their officials, releasing a final 2 minutes report saying everything they got wrong. You're in too deep. Everyone knows. Like, we're trying to protect these guys. No, you've already ruined that. Like, just take it the extra mile and protect them now.
Yeah, and baseball would still have umpires at every base. Even home plate. Like, you're still going to have major league umpires. They're just not going to call balls and strikes.
And they're still there if, you know, the system breaks. Like, the first year, you're going to have issues. It's going to be a gradual thing. It's not going to work perfectly from day one. But if we're trying to get things right, it seems like something we could get right. And look, it would cut down on the arguments over balls and strikes. Like, we've already seen one downside to have, and I'm for replay, but one downside to replay is we don't get as many funny ejections now because there's less things to argue. Like, I think one of the funnier things in baseball now, rather than coming out and going face to face with an umpire, is managers. And there is no one, and I mean, there's literally no one in baseball better than Gabe Kapler at this, at stalling the umpire by standing on the top step of the dugout and putting his hand out. Like, that has become an art. And they literally just abuse the hell out. Like, there's supposed to be a clock, and the umpire just gives it to him. And it's totally ridiculous. And they sit there and wait and wait and wait for the bench coach, for like Rob Thompson, whoever the bench coach is, to be on the phone with upstairs to find out whether they should challenge. So he can slowly walk out and be like, oh, by the way, I want to challenge this.
And the Phillies this year got clocked out once. They were like the only team I think I can remember ever doing that.
Actually enforced it. Gabe Kapler would sit there for a minute. Like, literally, they'd look at it four times. Like, let's just have a hard clock. There's no reason why there shouldn't be a buzzer that goes off in the stadium. And if you can't get it, and give the managers red challenge flags. And if it's not out on the field by the buzzer, like, they can't challenge it. Let's just call it what it is.
Yeah, there needs to be challenge flags, I think. Just the earmuff thing. Like, I'm not a fan. We need something better. We need a challenge flag. Something to that effect. They could think of something funnier, but
it would literally be like Joe. Okay. First of all, baseball managers, like, as being like, I know it's not a coach, it's a manager, right? Is already funny as it is that, like, I don't know whose idea in the invention of baseball it was to have the guys who coach the team to wear the same uniform the players do. Like, I don't know if you were a George Carlin fan, but he always does a bit about, like, could you imagine Bill Parcells, like, dressing up in, like, a full Giants uniform coaching the team? Like, could you imagine in literally any other sport, like, an NBA coach wearing the jersey of the team? Like, I don't know. We just accept it in baseball. It's actually, like, painfully hilarious that we.
Yeah, it's absurd. It doesn't make any sense. There's no reason for it.
There's literally no reason for it.
And in basketball, for so many years, they just changed it. And I don't know if I don't think I'm in support of the change, but they had to wear like a full on suit.
The bubble changed that
for some reason.
The bubble changed that. And so now you have coaches like Brett Brown wearing a polo or like, you know, a button down shirt, like he's ready to take, you know, holiday photos at the beach with his family or something. Like it was kind of like the outfits were kind of like painfully corny because it was new. But no, you're right. I'm for dressing down. Like your college coaches, pro coaches, whatever, we're all breaking out like their $5,000 Armani suits just to coach an NBA game.
I kind of like the suits. I'm kind of a suit guy. I think the suits.
The suits are good because when a coach really gets mad, and it doesn't happen often. Like if you
when they rip off the coat,
when they rip off the coat or the tie, or they just like totally, you know, they rip apart one of their $5,000 jackets. Like that's great.
Give me suits in the playoffs. Regular season, they can go with the
polo.
The polos.
You're fine. Yeah, they dress down for the playoffs in the bubble. NFL coaches obviously just wear whatever, but it's like really, really funny. Like baseball is a funny game, but it's funny that they make them wear the jersey. And then, and unless you're Gabe Kapler, like it doesn't really look all that good, but Gabe Kapler's more physically fit than half of his players. And so look, Joe Girardi doesn't need to wear the jersey, but if we're going to take it this far, like give the guys challenge flags, put a buzzer in the stadium. I always say that in NFL stadiums, there's no reason there shouldn't be a buzzer for delay of game because they don't enforce that rule well either. So let's have a buzzer for the clock. And if it's a close play, like the flag needs to be on the field by the buzzer. And if it's on there, then you get the challenge. If not, like no more, like people are so infatuated with like the procedural things in baseball. Like when you're trying to get a guy more time, you take a slow walk out to the mound and talk to the guy. We could get a clock on that too. Like there's an art form to letting the team announce that the batter's actually entering the game and then walking out there, and people are so infatuated with these traditions. Like, do we still really need these? I mean, again, they're kind of funny and they lead to the abuse of rules, and I find it comical, but it seems like we could pinpoint other things to actually just make these things better.
Oh, of course. There's so much people get very caught up in like not wanting to change things because it's the way it's always been. And there are so many weird things in baseball that are rules that don't need to be, or there should be rules about things. And people just don't want to change because of tradition and other things. But
it is
baseball is very odd. Baseball's odd.
It's part of what makes baseball great. And I'm not trying to take away those things. But I just think like at a certain point, the game needs to evolve. Like we're going to have challenges. We should just have just like regimented rules like every other sport about when we can and cannot challenge things. Same thing with a strike zone. Like we've already, so to speak, ruined the human error at every other base. Like we could just add it for the strike zone too. It seems inconsistent. Like pick one or the other.
Yeah, it's going to happen one of these days. One of these years, they will have an automated strike zone. I don't think we'll have Joe West calling balls and strikes forever.
Okay. Well, that's one funny thing about baseball is just like the consistent complaint, the rivalry between Major League Baseball's players and managers and literally anyone, and Joe West is some of baseball's greatest theater, just because he does not, like, I don't know if you know the mask he wore this year. It looked like it was like a beige. I don't even know what it was. It didn't look like a mask. It looked more like
it looked like a big Band-Aid.
Like it looked like a big Band-Aid or just like a beige napkin that he had like strung together. I mean, it was just very, very funny. Dusty Baker broke out a pretty good mask in the playoff that only covered his nose. Like we always complain that like all these people wear below the nose masks. He literally only covered his nose and left his mouth open. Like I think he's missing the point. So it does create for some funny things, but I don't know. Baseball is a funny sport is the best way to put it. Ty, unless you have anything to add, I realized I've eaten up a lot of your time here this morning. I thank you for it. It was a good conversation, and I would definitely love to do this again.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for having me on. I had a great time. Anytime you could talk baseball and its oddities and everything baseball, we kind of covered. So I'm glad we could do it, and thanks again.
Of course. Hopefully, look, maybe baseball's offseason will actually move a little bit faster at some point, and we'll have more substantially to talk about. But until then, I'm fine to just like shoot the bull about what's already happened, what's actually going to happen, and we can just talk about the oddities of baseball, because why not? Who wouldn't enjoy listening to that conversation? I think it's great. But yeah, Ty, thank you so much for your time, and again, like I said, we'll definitely do this again.
Sounds good.
That'll do it for this two-part episode of the Locked On Phillies podcast. Again, if you want to follow Ty, my very special guest, Ty, thank you for coming on. Give him a follow on Twitter at Ty Daubert. That's at TyDaubert. And you can follow all of his work at PhilliesNation.com. And a little shameless plug here for myself. Give me a follow at Dan_Wilson4 on Twitter. And of course, the podcast account at LO_Phillies. You'll get up-to-date information regarding every new podcast that I'm putting out, of course, here into January, going to spring training, and throughout the course of the season. Again, that'll do it for this two-part episode of the Locked On Phillies podcast. Stay tuned for more episodes later this week.